his tie and then cleared his throat.
Really?
Good night, Agent Sawyer, Maddox said.
Good night, sir,
he said, before disappearing down the hall. Maddox ambled to my desk and sat in one of the club chairs, casually leaning back with both of his elbows perched on the arms.
We don't have a meeting, I said, my eyes on the monitor.
No, we don't, Maddox said, sounding tired.
You made me his boss. You've got to let him speak to me at some point.
I don't see it that way. I leaned to the side to see his face, my face still squashed by my hand, and frowned at him, dubious.
You look like hell, Maddox said.
You look worse, I lied. He looked like an Abercrombie model, including the stern yet impervious stare, and I happened to know that he looked like one under his suit and tie, too. I hid behind my computer again before he could catch my eyes lingering on those damn unforgettable lips.
Hungry? He asked.
Starving.
Let's go pick up something. I'll drive.
I shook my head. I still have a lot to do.
You have to eat.
No.
God damn, you're stubborn.
I looked around my monitor again for effect. Agent Davies is saying I fucked my way to the top. Do you have any idea how hard it is to get the agents to take me seriously when I walk in here and get a promotion on day one?
It was day two, actually. And Agent Davies did fuck her way to the top. Well, to her top. She won't likely be promoted any farther.
I raised an eyebrow. Have you ever given her a raise?
Absolutely not.
Well, Davies might have. But technically, she's right about me. It's gnawing at me. I'm putting in extra hours so I can make myself believe that I earned the spot.
Grow up, Lise.
You first, Thomas. I thought I heard him breathe out the tiniest hint of a laugh, but I didn't acknowledge it. I simply allowed myself a smug smile from behind the safety of the lit screen between us. Car horns and sirens could be heard coming from the street below. Out there, the world continued, unaware that we worked late and lived lonely lives to make sure they could go to bed with one less mob boss, one less sex ring, and one less serial killer on the loose. The hunt and capture was what I worked for every day. Or that was what my function used to be. Now I was tasked with keeping Thomas's brother out of prison. At least, that was what it felt like. My smug smile vanished.
Tell me the truth, I said, against my hand. Yes, I'm hungry, Thomas droned.
That's not it. What is your objective? Taking Benny down or keeping Travis out of prison?
One is entangled with the other.
Pick one.
I practically raised him.
That's not an answer. Thomas took a deep breath and exhaled, his shoulders sagging as if the answer were weighing down on him.
I'd trade my life to save his. I would definitely walk away from this assignment. I've walked away before.
From the job?
No, and no, I don't want to talk about it.
Understood, I said.
I didn't want to talk about her either. You don't want me to talk about it? Everyone else in this office is dying to know.
I glared at him.
You just said you didn't.
There is something I want to know, though.
What? He asked, wary.
Who is in the pictures on your desk?
What makes you think it's a who? Maybe they're pictures of cats.
All emotion left my face. You don't have cats.
But I like cats.
I leaned back and I hit my desk, frustrated. You don't like cats!
You don't know me that well.
I hid behind my monitor again. I know that you either have a miracle lint brush or you don't have cats.
I could still like cats.
I leaned over. You're killing me. The faintest hint of a smile touched his lips.
Let's go to dinner.
Not unless you tell me who is in those frames. Thomas frowned.
Why don't you just look for yourself the next time you're in there?
Maybe I will.
Good.
We were quiet for several seconds, and then I finally spoke. I'll help you.
To dinner?
I'll help you help Travis. He shifted in the chair.
I didn't know you weren't planning to.
Maybe you shouldn't consider me a sure thing.
Maybe you shouldn't say yes, he snapped back.
I slammed my laptop closed. I didn't say yes. I said I would watch for the email from Constance.
He narrowed his eyes at me. I'm going to have to watch you. A smug smile broke out across my face. Yes, you are.
My cell phone chirped, and Val's name appeared on the screen. I picked up the phone and held it to my ear. Hey, Val.
Yes, just finishing up.
Okay, see you in 20.
I pressed the end button and laid my phone on the desk.
That hurts, Thomas said, checking his own phone.
Deal with it, I said,
opening the lower drawer to retrieve my purse and keys. His brow furrowed.
Is Mark's going?
I don't know, I said, standing before pulling my purse strap over my shoulder. Vacuums were being pushed back and forth somewhere down the hall. Only half the lights were on. Thomas and I were the only employees left in the wing besides the cleaning staff. Thomas's expression made me feel guilty. I tilted my head. Do you want to go?
If Val will be there, it would be less awkward if Marks were going, he said, standing.
Agreed. I thought about it for a moment. Invite him. Thomas's eyes sparked and he lifted his cell phone, tapping out a quick message. Within seconds, it beeped back. He looked up at me.
Where?
A place downtown called Kansas City Barbecue. Thomas laughed once.
Is she giving you the official tourist tour?
I smiled. It's the same bar from Top Gun. She said she didn't do those things when she moved here and she's never gotten to it. Now she has an excuse. Thomas tapped on his phone, a grin spreading quickly across his face.
KC Barbecue it is.
I sat on the end stool, glancing around the room. The walls were covered in Top Gun memorabilia. Posters, pictures, and signed headshots of the cast. To me, it didn't look anything like the bar in the movie, except for the jukebox and the antique piano. Val and Marks were deep in conversation about the pros and cons for the solicitation notice of the 9mm pistols versus our standard issue Smith & Wesson. Thomas was on the other side of the L-shaped bar, standing in the middle of a small herd of California girls any beach boy would be proud of. The women were all giggling as they drank and took turns at the dartboard, clapping and cheering every time Thomas hit a bullseye. Thomas didn't seem to be overly flattered by the attention, but he was having a good time, glancing over at me every now and again with a relaxed smile. He had taken off his jacket and rolled up the sleeves of his Oxford, revealing several inches of his thick, tanned forearms. His tie was loose, and his top button had been left undone. I willed away the jealousy threatening to bubble to the surface every time I looked over at his new fangirls. But I could still feel those arms around me, pulling me into different positions and watching as they flexed while he...
Lise, Val said, snapping her fingers. You didn't hear a flipping word I said, did you?
No, I said before finishing my drink. I'm going to head out.
What? No, Val said, pouting.
Her protruding bottom lip pulled back in as she smiled.
You don't have a ride. You can't leave.
I called the taxi. Val's eyes reflected her feelings of betrayal.
How dare you?
See you Monday, I said, situating my purse strap.
Monday? What about tomorrow? You're going to waste a perfectly good Saturday night?
I have to unpack, and I would actually like to spend time in the condo I'm paying for. Val was back to pouting.
Fine.
Good night, Lindy, Mark said before turning his attention back to Val. I pushed the door open, smiling politely to the patrons sitting outside on the patio. The multicolored string lights hanging overhead made me feel like I was on vacation. I still wasn't used to the fact that the balmy temperature and camisoles were now my normal. Instead of trudging through the frozen tundra of Chicago in a down coat, I could step outside in a summer dress and sandals if I wanted, even in the wee hours of the morning.
Leaving?
Thomas said, seeming rushed. Yes, I'd like to get completely unpacked this weekend.
Let me drive you.
You look... I leaned over to peek at his groupies through the window. Busy.
I'm not.
He shook his head as if I should have known better. When he looked at me that way, I felt like the only person in the city. My heart fluttered in my chest, and I begged any hatred I still had for him to make itself known. "You're not driving me home. You've been drinking." He sat his half-empty bottle of Corona on a table.
"I'm good, I swear."
I glanced at my wrist.
"That's nice," Thomas said.
"Thanks. It was a birthday present from my parents." Jackson never understood why I'd wear something so tiny that didn't have any numbers on it. Thomas covered my watch with his hand, his fingers wrapping around my small wrist 1.5 times. "Please let me drive you." "I've already called a cab."
"They'll get over it."
Lise. Thomas slid his hand from my wrist to my hand, leading me toward the parking lot.
"I'm going that way anyway."
The warmth in his smile made him seem more like the stranger I had taken home, and less like the ogre at the office. He didn't let go of my hand until we were at his black Land Rover Defender. It looked almost as old as I was, but Thomas had clearly made some upgrades and modifications, and he kept it meticulously clean.
"What?" he said,
noticing the look on my face after he sat in the driver's seat. "This is just such an odd vehicle to own in the city."
"I agree, but I can't give her up. We've been through too much. I bought her on eBay when I first moved here."
I had left behind my 4-year-old silver Toyota Camry in Chicago. I hadn't had the money saved up to ship it, and that long of a road trip hadn't sounded appealing in the least, so it was sitting in my parents' drive with the words "for sale" and my cell phone number written in white shoe polish on the front windshield. I hadn't thought of eBay. I was so determined not to think about Jackson or home that I hadn't thought about anyone or anything inside of Chicago's city limits. I hadn't called my old friends or even my parents. Thomas left me to my thoughts, lost in his own, as he navigated his SUV through traffic to our building. My hand had felt lonely ever since he let it go to open my door. Once he parked and jogged around to my side to be a gentleman again, I tried not to hope that he would take my hand, but I failed. However, Thomas didn't fail to disappoint me. I walked with my arms crossed against my chest, pretending like I wouldn't have taken his hand anyway. Once inside, Thomas pressed the button, and we waited in silence for the elevator. Once the doors opened, he motioned for me to step inside, but he didn't follow. "You're not coming?"
"I'm not tired."
"Are you going all the way back?" He thought about that and then shook his head.
"Nah, I'll probably go across the street."
"To Cutter's Pub?"
"If I go upstairs with you right now," he said, as the doors slid closed. He didn't get to finish.
The elevator climbed 5 floors and then set me free. Feeling ridiculous, I hurried to the window at the end of the hall and watched Thomas walk across the street with his hands in his pockets. A weird sadness came over me, until he paused and looked up. When his eyes met mine, a gentle smile stretched across his face. I waved at him, and he waved back and then continued on. Feeling half embarrassed and half exhilarated, I walked to my condo and dug around in my purse for my keys. The metal grated against each other as I jiggled the lock and turned the knob. Immediately, I closed the door behind me, and one after another, I slid the chain and flipped the deadbolt. The boxes stacked in my condo were beginning to look like furniture. I let my purse slide from my shoulder onto the small table next to me, and I kicked off my shoes. It was going to be a long, solitary night. 3 loud knocks on the door made me jump, and without checking the peephole, I scrambled to open the locks before yanking the door open so quickly that the wind swept my hair. "Hi," I said, blinking.
"Don't look so let down," Sawyer said, brushing past me into my living room.
He sat on my couch, leaning back into the cushions and stretching his arms out over the top. He looked more comfortable in my condo than I did. I didn't bother asking an FBI agent how he knew where I lived. "What the hell are you doing here, unannounced?"
"It's Friday. I've been trying to speak with you all week. I live in the next building over. I was outside smoking my e-cig and saw Maddox walk in here with you, but then he walked toward Cutter's without you."
I'm not understanding where any of that translates into an invitation.
Sorry, he said, not an ounce of apology in his voice. Can I come over? No. It's about Maddox's kid brother. That gave me pause. What about him? Sawyer enjoyed having my full attention. Did you read the file? Yes. All of it? Yes, Sawyer, stop wasting my time. Did you read the part about Benny trying to employ Travis? The SAC ordered Maddox to make his brother an asset. He has an in, no one else does. I know this already. I didn't want to let him in on the fact that Travis had already been slated for recruitment. My gut told me to keep that to myself. Did you also know that it's a shit idea? Abby Abernathy is the way to go. She doesn't get along with her father. Travis is the more viable choice. She whisked Travis off to Vegas and lied about the alibi. Trenton was at the fight. He knew his brother was there. The whole family was in on it. Except Thomas. He sighed in frustration and sat forward, resting his elbows on his knees. It's Thomas now? I glared at him. I've been telling Thomas for a year that we should use Abby. She would be a better asset. I disagree, I said simply. He scooted to the edge of the couch and held out his hands. Just hear me out. What is the point? If Travis finds out we've coerced his wife, the operation will implode. So the better option is to bring him, the unstable one, on as an asset, he said, deadpan. I think Maddox knows his brother and he is the lead on this. We should trust him. You've known him for a week. You trust him? No, not even a week. And yes, you should too. He's too close to this case. This is his brother. Hell, even the director is too close. For some unknown reason, he's practically adopted Maddox. They should all know better. This is not me being a jackass. This is reason, and it's making me crazy that no one is listening. Then you come in, someone unattached and put into a place of authority. I thought I finally got my chance, and I'll be damned if Maddox isn't actively keeping me away from you. I'll give you that, I said. What's worse is the louder I am, the less they hear. Maybe you should try speaking more softly. Sawyer shook his head. His smoldering blue eyes snuffed out when he looked away from me. Good God, Lindy. You need some help unpacking? I wanted to send him on his way, but an extra set of hands would make it go so much faster. Actually, he held up his hands again. I know my reputation at the office. I admit to half of it. Okay, most of it. But I'm not a dick all the time. I'll help you and go home. I swear. I glared at him. I'm a lesbian. No, you're not. Right, but the chances are better for me to become a lesbian than for me to have sex with you. Understood. Although I find you extremely attractive, I won't deny that in the real world I'd try my damnedest to take you home from the bar. You should know that even though I'm a jerk and a man whore at times, I'm not stupid. I wouldn't sleep with my boss. Sawyer's comment made my cheeks flush, and I turned my back to him. His southern charm wasn't lost on me, even though reason told me he was a waste of time for any woman wanting respect or a relationship. Sawyer might be a womanizer, and he might even be an asshole most of the time, but he had no problem with transparency. Kept at arm's length, Sawyer could actually be an asset, and maybe even a friend. I pointed to the kitchen. Let's start there. Chapter 7. I woke up to a nearly clean bedroom. All my clothes were either hanging in the closet or folded and put away in the dresser drawers. Sawyer and I had managed to unpack every box and even clean up most of our mess, aside from some packing nuts and empty boxes that we'd torn down and stacked by the front door. Wearing a gray sweatshirt and navy lounge pants, I wrapped my fuzzy white robe around me and then opened my bedroom door, looking out into the kitchen and living room. They were one and the same, separated only by the kitchen counter that doubled as an island and possibly a breakfast bar. My condo was small, but I didn't need much room. The thought of having a whole space to myself made me want to take in a deep breath and spin around like Maria in The Sound of Music, until I remembered that I wasn't alone. Sawyer was lying on my couch, still asleep. We'd blazed through 2.5 bottles of wine before he passed out. One of his arms was draped over his face, covering his eyes. One socked foot was on the floor,
likely to keep the room from spinning. I smiled. Even drunk, he'd kept his promise not to make a pass at me, and he'd earned an infinite amount of respect by the time I left him on the couch for my room. Poking through my pathetically stocked cabinets, I was trying to find something to eat that wouldn't offend my hangover. Just as I reached up for the box of saltine crackers, someone knocked on the door. I padded over in my pink and white gingham slippers, a Christmas present from my mother the year before. Damn, I thought. Need to call her today. Releasing the chain lock and deadbolt, I turned the knob and peeked through the crack in the door. "Thomas," I said, surprised. "Hey, I'm sorry for ditching you last night."
"You didn't ditch me."
"You're just waking up," he said, his eyes poring over my robe. I pulled the belt tighter. "Yeah, I kept the party going while I unpacked." "Need some help?" he asked. "No, I'm finished." His eyes danced around a bit, his investigator senses kicking in. I'd seen that expression so many times before.
"You finished all that unpacking by yourself?"
My hesitation to answer prompted him to touch his hand to the door and slowly push it open. His anger was instant. "What the fuck is he doing here?" I returned the door to its former position. "He's sleeping on the couch, Thomas. Jesus, do the math." He leaned in and whispered, "I've been on that couch before, too." "Oh, fuck you," I said. I pushed the door to shut it, but Thomas held it open.
"I told you if he bothered you to let me know."
I crossed my arms. "He wasn't bothering me. We had a nice night." His eyes flickered and his brows pulled inward. He took a step toward me and kept his voice low as he said, "If you're worried about how you're perceived, you shouldn't have let Sawyer spend the night." "Is there something you need?" I asked.
"What did he say to you? Did he discuss the case?"
"Why?"
"Just answer the questions, Lindy," he said, through his teeth.
"Yes, but I don't think it's anything he hasn't said to you."
"He wants to make Abby an asset."
I nodded.
"And?"
he asked. I was surprised that he was asking me. "Your brother won't allow it. Besides, I don't think she can be trusted. According to the file, she has helped her father numerous times despite their volatile relationship. She won't turn him in, except maybe for Travis. We'd have to arrest him first, though. Then maybe she'd play." Thomas sighed, and I inwardly cursed myself for thinking aloud.
"You would have to arrest him," Thomas said.
"What do you mean?" Thomas nearly whispered.
"It would blow my cover."
"You're not undercover. What the hell are you talking about?" Thomas shifted his weight.
"It's hard to explain, and I won't, while I'm in the hall and while Sawyer is pretending to be asleep on your couch."
I turned, and one of Sawyer's eyes popped open. He sat up, grinning.
"To be fair, I was asleep until you knocked on the door. This couch is comfy, Lindy. Where did you get it?" he asked, pushing down on the cushions.
Thomas opened the door wider and pointed to the hall.
"Out."
"You can't kick him out of my condo," I said.
"Get the fuck out," Thomas yelled, the veins in his throat bulging.
Sawyer stood up, stretched, and then grabbed his things off my long rectangular coffee table, his keys scraping against the glass as he did so. He stood between me and the door jamb, just inches from my face.
"See you Monday morning."
"Thanks for the help," I said, trying to sound apologetic while still remaining professional. It was an impossible balance. Sawyer nodded to Thomas and then left us for the hallway. Once the elevator opened and then closed again, Thomas looked at me with a stern glare. I rolled my eyes. "Oh, stop. You are trying too hard." I walked off, and Thomas followed me inside. I retrieved the saltines from the cabinet and held them out. "Breakfast?" Thomas seemed confused.
"What?"
"I'm hungover. Crackers are for breakfast."
"What do you mean I'm trying too hard?"
I looked up at him. "You like me."
You're okay, I guess," he said, stumbling over his words.
"But you're my boss, you don't think we should date, so now you're scaring away any interested parties."
"That's quite a theory," he said.
I pulled apart the plastic package, put a stack of saltines on a plate, poured a glass of tepid water, and used the counter for a table. "Are you saying I'm wrong?"
"You're not wrong. but you're emotionally unavailable, remember? Maybe I'm just doing Sawyer a favor. The crackers crunched between my teeth, and the cotton mouth I was experiencing from too much alcohol became worse. I pushed the plate away and took a drink of water.
You shouldn't be so hard on Sawyer. He's just being a team player. You're trying to save your brother. This is important to you.
For whatever reason, your family doesn't know you're a Fed, and now you're forcing your brother to join the ranks. We all get it, but no need to piss on every idea your team brings you.
You know, Lise, your observations aren't always correct. Sometimes things go deeper than what you see on the surface.
The reasons leading to the origin of the problem aren't always simple, but the solution always is.
Thomas sat on the couch, looking distraught.
They don't get it, Lise. And you definitely don't get it.
My tough shell melted at the sight of his tough shell melting.
I might, if you explain it to me.
He shook his head, rubbing his face with his hand. She knew this would happen. That's why she made him promise.
Who's she? Camille?
Thomas looked up at me, completely pulled out of his line of thought.
What the hell made you think of her?
I walked the 10 feet to the couch and sat next to him.
Are we going to work together on this or not?
We are.
Then we have to trust each other. If something is between me and getting the job done, I remove whatever it is.
Like me? He asked with a half-smile.
I recalled our argument in the fitness room and wondered how I'd found the courage to tell the ASAC to get out of my way.
Thomas, you have to fix this.
What?
Whatever is messing with your head. Sawyer seems to think you're too close to this case. Is he right?
Thomas frowned.
Sawyer has wanted this case since I brought it to the supervisor. He wanted it when I was promoted to supervisor, and he wanted it when I was promoted to ASAC.
Is it true? Were you promoted because of the break you got in the case?
Travis dating Abernathy's daughter?
I waited for his answer.
He looked across the room, his expression somber.
For the most part. But I've also worked my ass off.
Then quit screwing around and let's bring these guys in.
Thomas stood and began to pace.
Bringing them in means nailing them, and the easiest way to do that is to use my little brother.
So do it.
You know it's not that easy. You can't be that naive, Thomas snapped.
You know what has to be done. I'm not sure why you're making it so hard.
Thomas thought about that for a moment and then sat next to me again. He covered his mouth and nose with his hands, and then he closed his eyes.
Do you want to talk about it? I asked.
No,
he said, his voice muffled.
I sighed. Do you really not want to talk about it, or is this where I demand that you do?
He let his hands fall to his lap, and he sat back.
She had cancer.
Camille?
My mother.
The air in the room became heavy, so much so that I couldn't move. I couldn't take a breath. All I could do was listen.
Thomas's eyes were fixed on the floor, his mind trapped in a bad memory.
Before she died, she spoke to each of us. I was 11. I've thought about it a lot. I just can't.
He took a deep breath.
Imagine what it was like for her, trying to tell her sons everything she wanted to teach us over a lifetime, but having to do so in just a few weeks.
Can't imagine what that was like for you.
Thomas shook his head.
Every word she said, even every word she tried to say, is branded into my memory.
I leaned back against the cushion, my head propped by my hand, listening as Thomas described how his mother had reached out for him, how beautiful her voice had been, even though she could barely speak, and how much he knew she'd loved him, even in her last moments. I thought about what kind of woman must have raised a man like Thomas, along with 4 other boys. What kind of person could say goodbye with enough strength and love to last her children the rest of their childhoods? His descriptions of her left a knot in my throat.
Thomas's eyebrows pulled together. She said, "Your dad is going to take this hard.
You're the oldest.
I'm sorry, and it's not fair, but it's up to you, Thomas. Don't just take care of them. Be a good brother."
I rested my chin on my hands, watching the various emotions scroll across his face. I couldn't relate, but I definitely empathized. So much so that I had to resist wrapping my arms around him. The last thing I said to my mother was that I'd try. What I'm about to do to Travis doesn't feel like trying. Not one fucking bit. Really? I asked, dubious. All the work you've done on this case? All the strings you had to pull to get Travis recruited instead of sent to prison? My dad is a retired police detective. Did you know that? Thomas looked at me with his dark hazel eyes. He was neck deep in his past, family baggage, guilt, and disappointment. I wasn't sure how much worse his story could get. Part of me was afraid he was going to admit to being abused. Hesitant, I shook my head. Did he hit you? Thomas's face screwed into disgust. No. No, nothing like that. His eyes lost focus. Dad checked out for a few years, but he's a good man. What do you mean? I said. It was right after she spoke to me, for the last time. I was crying in the hallway, just outside the bedroom door. I wanted to get it all out so the boys wouldn't see me. I heard Mom ask Dad to quit his job at the station, and she made him promise that he'd never let us follow in his footsteps. She'd always been proud of him, of his job, but she knew her death would be hard on us, and she didn't want Dad in a line of work that could make us orphans. Dad loved the job, but he promised. He knew Mom was right. Our family couldn't take another loss. He rubbed his thumb on his lips. We came too close with Trenton and Travis. Along with Abby, they almost died in that fire. Does your dad know? No. But if something had happened to them, he wouldn't have survived it. I touched his knee. You're good at being a federal agent, Thomas. He sighed. They won't see it that way. I spent the rest of my childhood trying to be a grown-up. I lost a lot of sleep, trying to think of something else to be. I couldn't let my dad break his promise to her. He loved her too much. I couldn't do that to him. I reached for his hand and held it in mine. His story was so much worse than I'd thought. I couldn't imagine how much guilt he carried around with him every day, loving the job he wasn't supposed to have. When I decided to apply for the Bureau, it was the hardest, most exciting thing I'd ever done. I've tried to tell them so many times, but I just can't. You don't have to tell him. If you truly believe he won't understand, then don't. It's your secret to keep. Now it's going to be Travis's secret to keep. I wish... I put my other hand on top of his. You could see this the way I do. You're protecting him the only way you can. I potty trained Travis. I bathed him every night. My dad loved us, but he was lost in his grief. For a while after he got his new job, he used to drink until he passed out. He's made up for it. He apologizes all the time for taking the easy way out. But I raised Trav. I bandaged his scrapes. I got in so many fights over him and fought next to him. I can't let him go to prison. His voice broke. I shook my head. You're not. The director agreed to recruit him. He's home free. Do you understand what I'm dealing with here? Trav will have to lie to our family and his wife, like I've done. But I chose this, and I know how hard it is, Lise. Travis doesn't get a choice. Not only will Dad be disappointed, but Travis will also be undercover. Only the director and our team will know. He's going to have to lie to everyone he knows because I knew his connection to Benny could get me this promotion. I'm his fucking brother. What kind of person does that to his own brother? Thomas's self-loathing was difficult to watch, especially knowing there was no reprieve. You didn't do this just for a promotion. You might tell yourself that, but I don't buy it. I squeezed his hand. His misery was so heavy that even I could feel it. And you didn't force him to engage in illegal activity. You're just trying to spare him the consequences of his actions. He's a kid, Thomas said, his voice faltering. He's just getting ready to turn 21, for Christ's sake. He's a fucking kid, and I bailed on him. I left for California and didn't look back, and now he's in some serious shit. Thomas, listen to me.
You've got to get this straight in your head. If you don't believe in the reasons for Travis's recruitment, he sure as hell isn't going to. He cupped my hands in both of his. Then he brought my fingers to his mouth and kissed them. My entire body leaned toward him for a fraction of an inch, as if by a gravitational pull I couldn't control. As I watched his lips warm my skin, I felt jealous of my own hands. Never had I wanted to defy my own rules so ardently that my conscience was at war in my own head. Not even half of these conflicting emotions had existed the night I decided to leave Jackson. The effect Thomas had on me was wonderful and maddening and terrifying. I remember the guy I met my first night here, the one without the pressure of running a field office or making the tough decision to protect his brother. No matter what you tell yourself, you're a good person, Thomas. He looked over at me and pulled his hand away from mine, indignant.
I'm no fucking saint. If I told you the story about Camille, you wouldn't be looking at me like that.
You mentioned that she's Trent's girlfriend? I can guess. He shook his head.
It's worse than you think.
I'd say helping Travis avoid a prison sentence is atonement.
Not even close.
He stood. I reached for him, but missed. I didn't want him to leave. I had an entire day and nothing to unpack. Now that Thomas was in my living room, he seemed to fill up the empty space. I was afraid it would feel lonely when he left.
We can do this, you know, I said. Travis will be free. He can stay home with his new wife, and he'll have a good job. It'll all work out.
It had better. God owes me one. More than one.
He wasn't in my living room. He was miles away from me.
We just have to stay focused, I said. This has to be the best damn thing either of us has ever pulled off.
He nodded, considering my words.
And what about Camille? I asked. Do you have that handled?
Thomas walked toward the door, putting his hand on the knob. Another time. I think we've had enough truth for one day.
When the door slammed, my shoulders flew up to my ears, and I closed my eyes. After the few decorations Sawyer had nailed to the walls the night before stopped rattling, I sat back against the couch cushions in a huff. Thomas was supposed to make it easier to hate him, and after what he'd shared with me, it was impossible. I wondered who at the Bureau knew about his personal conflicts, with his brother and the Vegas case, and keeping his career from his family. Maybe Marks, likely the SAC, and definitely the director. Thomas had made me his partner on this. For whatever reason, he trusted me. And just as inexplicably, that made me want to work that much harder to wrap up this case. Val had said before that Thomas had a loyal circle and to be careful what I said. Now, I was part of that circle. And I was curious if it was because he needed to use my talents like he did Sawyer's, or if it was just that he needed me. I covered my face, thinking about his lips on my skin, and I knew that I was hoping for both.
Chapter 8.
Absolutely not, I said to Agent Davies. She gritted her teeth, sitting stiffly in my office. You're not getting $3 million of taxpayer money for some half-cocked scheme.
It's not a half-cocked scheme, Lindy. It's right there in the file.
If we wire $3 million to that account, we'll have Vic's trust. You know how much a middleman's trust is worth to me?
$3 million? Davies said, her big eyes only half hopeful.
No. Stop wasting my time. I continued typing on my laptop, checking my schedule. Val and I had a lunch meeting at Fuzzy's, and then I had to ask Thomas if I could speak with the other language expert, Agent Grove, about some discrepancies I had found in his FD-302. Davies slapped my desk and stood up.
Just another goddamn bossy.
Her grumbling trailed off as she got closer to my door. Agent Davies, I called. She turned around, her long brown ponytail flipping as she did so. The annoyed expression on her face hardened when her eyes met mine.
You need to get one thing straight. I am not bossy. I'm the fucking boss.
Davies' stern look softened, and she blinked.
Have a nice day, Agent Lindy.
Likewise, Agent Davies. I motioned for her to shut the door, and as it closed, I put on my headphones and listened to the digital file Thomas had sent me this morning. The file Agent Grove had translated a few days before was accurate, except for a few key elements. I'd meant to ask Thomas about it earlier, but something felt off. It was mostly a number here and there, but then Grove had listed a suspect by the wrong name and begun leaving things out altogether. I pulled off the headset and walked out into the squad room, noticing Grove wasn't at his desk. "Val," I called, "have you seen Maddox?" She walked over to me, holding a small bag of potato chips in one hand and licking the salt off the other.
"He's interviewing someone over at the Taliban Welcome Center."
I frowned.
"Really? We're really going to call it that?"
"It's what everyone calls it," she said, shrugging.
Val was referring to the million-dollar building that sat in front of our multi-million-dollar building. It served as a security checkpoint for visitors, and it was where we would question persons of interest. That way, if they or their friends attempted to bring explosives in, the main building wouldn't be at risk. Someone had dubbed this checkpoint as the Taliban Welcome Center, and for some bizarre reason, the nickname had stuck. I flicked my ID badge, habit to make sure I had it on before I left, and I headed out. It was normally a nice jaunt across the parking lot to the checkpoint building, but low gray clouds were rumbling across the sky, and huge raindrops began to fall a few moments after I'd stepped onto the concrete. The air smelled metallic, and I breathed in deep. The last week had been spent mostly indoors. That was something I hadn't prepared for. It was easy to work behind a desk in freezing Chicago temperatures. Working so much when it was downright balmy was proving to be more difficult as the gorgeous days came, one after another. I looked up at the sky, seeing flashes of lightning at the edge of the city. It would be easier to be at work in stormy weather. I pushed through the glass double doors, flicking my hands and spraying the carpet with rainwater. Despite being soaked, I was in a good mood. I looked to the agent at the desk with a broad smile. She wasn't impressed with my positivity, my manners, or the fact that I'd walked that far in the rain. My smile fell away, and I cleared my throat. "Special Agent Maddox." She took a long look at my badge and then nodded behind her. "He's in interrogation room, too."
"Thank you," I said.
I walked over to the security door and bent over a bit while holding my badge to the black box on the wall near the door. I felt ridiculous, and someday soon I would have to find a retractable badge holder. The bolt lock clicked, and I pushed through. I walked down the hall and then through a door before seeing Thomas standing alone, watching Agent Grove question an unknown subject, also known as an unsub. A sullen, lanky Asian man in a bright tracksuit.
"Agent Lindy," Thomas said.
I crossed my arms, aware that my white blouse was wet and I was cold. "How long has he been at it?"
"Not long. The subject has been cooperating."
I listened to them conversing in Japanese. Immediately, I frowned.
"What made you come this way?" Thomas asked.
"I had some questions about a few of Grove's transcriptions. I need your permission to speak with him."
"For the Yakuza case?"
"Yes." He hummed, unaffected.
"Your function here is confidential."
"Someone left a stack of his reports on my door. I assumed Grove knew I was also a specialist and wanted me to look them over."
"Assumptions are dangerous, Lise. I put them there."
"Oh."
"Did you find anything?"
"A lot of things." I looked through the glass at the three people inside. Another agent was sitting in the corner, taking notes, but otherwise looking extremely bored. "Who's that?" I asked.
"Pittman. He wrecked his third vehicle. He's on desk duty for a while."
I looked to Thomas. He was unreadable. "You don't seem surprised that I found some discrepancies," I said, watching Grove through the one-way mirror. I pointed. "There! He just translated that 11 former members of Yakuza are living in a building that also houses other subjects of Bureau investigations."
"So?"
"The unsub relayed that the members are in fact current members of Yakuza, and their number is 18, not 11. Grove's omitting. He's either shit at Japanese, or he's unreliable.
Agent Grove stood and then left the unsub in the room alone with the transcribing agent. He slowly walked out before closing the door behind him. When he saw the two of us, he startled, but quickly recovered. "Agent Maddox," he said in a nasal tone. Anyone else might have missed the slight trembling in his fingers when he pushed up his glasses. He was a pudgy man with copper skin. His eyes were so dark that they were nearly black, and his wiry mustache twitched when he spoke. Thomas gestured to me with the same hand that held his coffee.
"This is Agent Lindy, the new supervisor for Squad 5.
"I've heard the name," Grove said, eyeing me.
"From Chicago?"
"Born and raised." Grove had the look I'd seen often right before a person asked me if I was Korean, Japanese, or Chinese. He was trying to decide if I could speak the language he had been incorrectly translating.
"Maybe you should come in here and help. He's got a weird accent. Keeps tripping me up," Grove said.
I shrugged. "Me? I don't speak Japanese. I've been thinking of taking lessons, though."
Thomas spoke up. "Maybe you could work with her, Grove."
"Like I have time for that," he grumbled, mindlessly rubbing his sweaty palms against each other.
"Just a thought," Thomas said.
"I'm grabbing coffee. I'll see you around." Thomas lifted his chin once, waiting until Agent Grove left the room.
"Good call," Thomas said, watching Pittman doodle.
"How long have you known?" I asked.
"I've had my suspicions for at least 3 months. I was sure, when I missed an arrest after walking in on an empty room, that I knew had been crawling with Yakuza 2 days prior."
I raised an eyebrow. Thomas shrugged.
"I was going to bring him in to translate the Title Threes we'd gotten on Benny's guys in Vegas, but after that missed arrest, I thought better of it. Instead, I wanted to bring in someone new. Someone better."
"Someone who wasn't a double agent?" Thomas turned to me with the smallest hint of a smile.
"Why do you think I brought you here?"
"Will you arrest him?" I asked. "What will you do?"
He shrugged. "I doubt we'll keep using him as a translator."
I made a face. "I'm serious."
"Me too."
Thomas walked with me down the hall and out to the parking lot, tossing his coffee and opening an umbrella.
"You should invest in one of these, Lise. It's spring, you know."
He hadn't said my name as acerbically as before. He'd spoken it softly, his tongue caressing each letter, and I found myself glad that we had the excuse of the rain to keep close. I dodged puddles, inwardly enjoying it when Thomas struggled to keep the umbrella over my head. Finally, he resorted to putting his free hand around my waist and squeezing me to his side. If we came upon a puddle, he could simply and effortlessly lift me over it.
"I have never liked the rain," Thomas said, as we stopped in front of the lobby doors while he shook off his umbrella. "But I might have changed my mind."
I grinned up at him, trying my best not to make obvious the ridiculous giddiness I felt over his innocent flirtation. Once inside the lobby of the main building, Thomas was back to his typical ASAC demeanor.
"I'll need an FD-302 on your findings by the end of the day. I'm going to need to report this to the SAC.
"On it," I said, turning for the elevator.
"Lise?"
"Yes?"
"Will you be working out today?"
"Not today. I'm having lunch with Val."
"Oh."
I relished the flicker of disappointment in his eyes. "I'll be there tomorrow."
"Yeah, okay,"
he said, trying to play off the small blow to his ego. If he looked any unhappier, I wouldn't be able to thwart the smile threatening to break out across my face. Once inside the elevator, when the thrill wore off, I was thoroughly annoyed with myself. I'd essentially kicked him out of my bedroom the night we met because I was sure I would be too busy enjoying my freedom. Being with Jackson had been suffocating, and a transfer had seemed like the perfect solution. Why in the hell do I feel this way about Thomas? Despite my feelings about starting a new relationship, and considering his temper and emotional baggage, what is it about him that makes me lose my ability to reason? Whatever it was, I needed to get a handle on it. We had to focus on getting through our assignment in St. Thomas, and something messy like feelings wouldn't help anyone. The elevator opened to reveal Val smiling brightly in the hallway. After taking in the sight of me, her good mood vanished.
"Haven't you heard of an umbrella, Lise? Jesus!"
I rolled my eyes. You act as if I'm covered in dog shit. It's rain.
She followed me to my office and sat in one of the twin chairs in front of my desk. She crossed her legs and arms and glared at me.
Spill it.
What are you talking about? I said, kicking off my heels and placing them next to each other by the floor vent.
Really? She tucked her chin. Don't be that girl. Chicks before dicks.
I sat down and laced my fingers together on top of my desk. Just tell me what you want to know, Val. I have things to do. I think I just got Agent Grove fired. Or arrested.
What?
Her eyebrows shot up for half a second, and then she was frowning again.
You might be an ace at diversion, but I know when someone's not telling me something. And you, Lise, have a secret.
I covered my eyes with my hand. How can you tell? I've got to get better at this.
What do you mean, how can I tell? Do you know how many interrogations I've sat in on? I just know. I'd say I'm psychic, but that's stupid, so I'll just say, thank you, Dad, for being a cheating bastard and heightening my bullshit-o-meter.
I pulled my hand away and gave her a look.
What? I tell the truth, unlike you, you fake, foul friend.
I wrinkled my nose. That was harsh.
So is knowing that your friend doesn't trust you.
It's not that I don't trust you, Val. It's just none of your business. Val stood and walked around the club chair, placing her hands on the back.
Quite frankly, I'd rather you not trust me. And you're no longer invited to Fuzzy's.
What? I shrieked. Come on!
No. No Fuzzy's for you. And they love me, Lise. Do you know what that means? No Fuzzy's for lunch. No Fuzzy's forever.
She emphasized every syllable of the last word. Then she widened her eyes and turned on her heels before shutting the door behind her. I crossed my arms and pouted. 5 seconds later, my landline rang and I picked up the phone. Lindy, I snapped.
Hurry up, I'm hungry.
I smiled, grabbed my purse and shoes, and hurried to the hall. Chapter 9.
So, Val said as she chewed, wiping the mixture of mayo and mustard from the corner of her mouth. You have a date with Maddox in 3 weeks. Is that what you're telling me?
I frowned.
No, it was what you pulled out of me.
She smiled, pursing her lips to keep the large bite of BLT from tumbling out. I rested my chin on my fist, pouting.
Why can't you just leave things alone, Val? I need him to trust me.
She swallowed.
How many times have I told you? There are no secrets in the Bureau. Maddox should have assumed that I'd find out eventually. He's acutely aware of my talents.
What is that supposed to mean?
Curb the jealousy, OJ. I mean that Maddox knows we're friends, and he knows I can sniff out any secret better than a coon dog.
A coon dog? Who are you right now?
My grandparents live in Oklahoma. I used to visit every summer, she said dismissively. Listen, you're doing a crackerjack job as a supervisor. The SAC clearly has an eye on you. You're going to be a Quantico before you can say, office affair.
I nearly choked on my fry. Val, you're killing me.
He can't keep his eyes off of you.
I shook my head.
Stop.
She teased me with a knowing look.
He smiles sometimes when you walk by. I don't know. It's kind of cute. I've never seen him like this.
Shut up.
So, what about Travis's wedding?
I shrugged. We're going to spend the night in Illinois, and then we'll go to St. Thomas.
Val's grin was contagious.
I chuckled.
What? Knock it off, Val. It's work.
She threw a fry at me, and then she allowed me to finish my lunch in peace. We left Fuzzy's to head back to the office. As we passed Marx's office, he waved at Val.
Hey, meet me at Cutter's tonight, he said.
Tonight? She shook her head. No, I have to buy groceries.
Groceries? He said, making a face. You don't cook.
Bread, salt, mustard, I have nothing, she said.
Meet me afterward. Maddox is coming.
His eyes floated to me for just a fraction of a second, long enough to make my cheeks flush pink. I retreated to my office,
not wanting to seem eager to hear of Thomas's plans. Just as I sat in my throne and woke up my laptop, Sawyer knocked on the partially open door. "Bad time?" he asked. "Yes," I said, rolling the mouse. I clicked on the icon for my email and frowned as I read the numerous subject lines. How in the hell does this happen? I'm gone for an hour and I have 32 new messages. Sawyer shoved his hands into his pockets and leaned against the door jamb. We're needy. There's an email from me. Great. Do you want to go to Cutter's tonight? Is that the only bar in the neighborhood? He shrugged, walking toward my desk and falling into a chair. He leaned back, his knees spread and his fingers intertwined at his chest. This isn't my living room, Agent. Sorry, ma'am, he said, sitting up. Cutter's is just where we go. It's close for a lot of us who live in the area. Why do so many of us live in that area? I asked. He shrugged. Housing has a good relationship with the property owners. It's fairly close to the office. It's a nice neighborhood, and for Midtown, it's pretty affordable. He smiled. There's a little eatery in Mission Hills called Brooklyn Girl. It's pretty fantastic. Want to go there? Where's Mission Hills? About 10 minutes from your condo. I thought about it for a second. Just food, right? It's not a date. God, no. Not unless you want to buy me dinner. I chuckled. No. Okay. Brooklyn Girl at 8:30. Boom, he said, standing. What was that? I don't have to eat alone. Pardon me while I celebrate. Get out of here, I said, waving him away. Sawyer cleared his throat, and then I noticed the door hadn't closed when it should have. I glanced up to see Thomas standing in the doorway. His short hair was still damp from his post-workout shower. How long have you been standing there? I asked. Long enough. I barely acknowledged his taunt. You really should stop hovering in my doorway. It's creepy. He sighed, shutting the door behind him before approaching my desk. He sat, waiting patiently, while I looked over my emails. Lise. What? I said from behind the monitor. What are you doing? Checking my email, also known as work. You should try it. You used to call me sir. You used to make me. An awkward long silence prompted me to lean over and meet his eyes. Don't make me explain. Explain what? He asked, genuinely intrigued. I looked away, annoyed, and then gave in. It's just dinner. At Brooklyn Girl. So? It's my favorite restaurant. He knows that. Jesus, Thomas, this is not a pissing match. He considered that for a moment. Maybe not to you. I shook my head in frustration. What does that even mean? Do you remember the night we met? Every bit of my sass and nerve melted away, and I instantly felt the same way I had the first few seconds after he climaxed inside me. The awkwardness put me in my place faster than intimidation ever could. What about it? I asked, chewing on my thumbnail. He hesitated. Did you mean what you said? Which part? He stared into my eyes for what seemed like an eternity, planning what he would say next. That you're emotionally unavailable. He hadn't just taken me off guard. All my guards were taken off faster than any other oft guards in the history of oft guards. I don't know how to answer that, I said. Well done, Lise. Does that go for everyone? Or just me? He asked. Nor that. I've just been... His expression changed from casually flirty to curious and flirty. Who's the SWAT guy you left behind in Chicago? I glanced behind me as if someone who might be hanging on the 7th floor window could hear. I'm at work, Thomas. Why the hell are we talking about this now? We can talk about it over dinner, if you'd like. I have plans, I said. The skin around his eyes tightened. A date? No. If it's not a date, then Sawyer won't care. I'm not canceling on him because you want to win whatever game you're playing. This is already old. You make me tired. Then it's settled. We'll discuss your ex-ninja at my favorite restaurant at 8:30. He stood. No, we won't. None of that sounds appealing. At all. He looked around and playfully pointed at his chest. No, you're not appealing either, I snapped.
You're a terrible liar for a Fed, Thomas said with a smirk. He walked to my door and opened it.
What is with everyone today? Val is acting crazy and